Tech of Sports with Nicholas Cowie on birding and the Christmas bird count. This week on the Tech of Sports, a returning guest in Nicholas Cowie. And Modern Life Network mobile apps are a great way to receive our content on your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget, you can use Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and other apps to get all your favorite netcast or Modern Life Podcast Network shows preloaded. The Tech of Sports is a member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. And the Tech of Sports production of the Modern Life Podcast Network at modernlifepodcastnetwork.com. Thanks again for joining us this week. And great to have Nicholas Cowie back on for the talk about exciting and very popular sport of bird watching, which may be new to some people. If you didn't tune in last year around this time, you missed a great episode. It did really well and got a lot of great feedback on it. So we're bringing Nicholas back, and just a really passionate guy about nature, and he's got all the credentials to back it up. He's an Eagle Scout. He's a merit badge counselor, nature director, rose up camp program director at the Scout Reservation in Bastrop, Texas. He has worked with the Fort Smith Mountain Men adventure firm. He develops travel programs for youth all around the western states in the U.S. And he's also very involved with the Lost Pines Christmas Bird Count, an annual bird survey put on and directed by the Audubon Society. So he's into conservation and a lot of things hands-on when it comes to nature. So, Nicholas, thanks for joining us again this year.
You bet.
Yeah, great to have you on. And the bird count is coming up again here for Christmas. I know you're excited about that. Anything new this year, and any new wrinkles for the bird count? What we can expect, or anything you want to talk about regarding that?
Yeah, for the folks that are local coming to the bird count, we have our guest speaker is Dorian Anderson, and you want to talk about an outdoor extreme birder. This guy biked 18,000 miles across the United States in 1 year, seeing 617 species of birds. That's not an armchair birder right there. That's pretty serious. And that combines two great sports of biking across the nation and birding. He's going to share his story with us on December 19th on Saturday evening at 5 o'clock at the Lost Pines Hyatt Resort and Spa. I work at LCRA McKinney Ruffs, the nature park next door, and we're really glad to be working together with the Hyatt on this bird count, where we can offer some pretty cool workshops. We also have a musician that's coming to share some pieces that were inspired by bird music. We're going to be having a talk on owls and bird anatomy by some local professors and bird experts. And then, of course, we'll be doing the count day following that on Sunday, December the 20th. And that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, that's where we're going to be out counting as many birds as we got. The results last year were 19,000 birds total and about 120 species. So we dropped our number of species, but almost tripled the amount of birds that were actually seen, thanks largely to two really big flocks of blackbirds and grackles that flew over.
What would you account for the species drop? Maybe, Nicholas, is that just kind of how things go? You get different species in different years, and that's always changing over?
Oh, it varies from region to region. But what I can say is that sometimes we don't get the waterfowl we expect, or we get different access to areas to bird. And sometimes it's more productive for quantity. We get more bird sightings, and we might not get the number of species. I leave it up to the gurus up at Cornell University to try to define, what are the real reasons. And it might just be the time of year or the weather.
Yeah, that's true. The weather changes every year, different weather patterns that could have an effect. And it's really an exciting couple of days there at the Hyatt Lost Pines. And if people go to visit lostpines.com, they can get more information on that, and we'll have Nicholas give his contact information out here a little bit as we go on in the show. And I know we really hit birding hard last year. I learned a lot. The listeners used a lot. Bird watching is really a sport that is enjoyed by millions of people. And while the extreme sport people may I wouldn't say they're going to look down on people into birding, but I think that the tides have changed a little bit, and you're getting people interested in all sorts of other sports that are also finding maybe a little crossover into birding, aren't you?
Well, you're getting a younger demographic, and part of that is some star birders that are a little younger, that are making it look a little more cool. Mm-hmm. You also have people that might not call themselves birders, but you got to admit, any duck hunter that's able to ID something on the fly before they pull the trigger has to be pretty good at identification, so they don't get in trouble and shoot the wrong thing. So, and obviously, if you're duck commander style out there watching ducks all day long, you're bird watching, right? So there's some publications that some game departments have put out on birding from the deer blind. You've already probably got a pretty good optic sitting there, even though it's got crosshairs in it, and you're in a blind or you're out in the woods and you're able to see a lot of birds that way. You're probably pretty camouflaged as well.
So some people may be birders and they don't even know it.
Right. I mean, one good fisherman is out on the boat and,
right.
and doesn't like seeing an osprey come down and snatch a bass out of the water. That's a pretty cool memory, unless that's the bass you were trying to catch.
Exactly. It depends on if you if you're more serious about the fishing or you're more serious about the birding. So, but I'm glad you mentioned this is really and the event at Lost Pines and just bird watching or birding in general is really a sport that the whole family can kind of do together. And I think that's some of the secret sauce behind it, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. There's so many facets. Some people say, well, you know, I don't know if you'd call it a sport. Is it really that competitive? Well, like anything, you can be casual about it and just enjoy being outdoors. But the competitive side is that there's actually a World Series of birding. And here in Texas, we have different events. There's even events for blind birders to identify as many birds by ear as possible. There are events for the family that's kind of like a tailgate party. Strategy is you have to count as many birds in a 24-hour time frame within a 17-foot circle. So the strategy is where do you put that circle to maximize the number of birds you think you can see for being close to habitat, but also having a good line of sight to see birds that are a long ways away. And there's a big year. It's kind of a competition. How many birds can you see in 1 year? Then there's called the big day. How many birds can you see in 1 day? The Christmas bird count, though, is not really competition. It's a citizen science effort to try to capture accurately the number of birds that are occurring in about 2,300 circles all over the Western Hemisphere. So it's everybody in the month of December and early January, which is a good time of year to see what's out there.
What is the information used for maybe that's gathered in the bird count? Is it put to use? Is it, I know it's stored and it's referenced over time, but what can that information be used for?
It can be used to tell us information about changes in populations that, and we don't know what it is. You know, there's a lot of theories. Some changes, depending on the species, might be due to drought, you know, temperature fluctuations from year to year in different parts. And in the larger picture, it's a kind of a benchmark that lets us know how the ecosystem is doing. And, you know, we saw a decrease in waterfowl 1 year because they all, in a drought, there's not a lot of ponds with water. So where do you think they all flock to? The river, right? Mm-hmm. And then when there was a lot of rain, they were no longer on the river, and they went to a bunch of ponds that we didn't have access to on private property. So it made it look like our duck count went way down. But that's just for this little 15-mile diameter circle. Then when you look at the big picture nationwide, you can see how all the other circles are doing and realize that it's not as bad as you thought it was. So there's a lot bigger picture than just looking at the trends from year to year within one little circle. It's the every drop filling the bucket gives you a much broader perspective.
Yeah, we're with Nicholas Cowie here. He's the lead compiler for the Lost Pines Christmas Bird Count coming up in December. He's a nature enthusiast. He's very knowledgeable. He's my go-to person when I have questions on this. And he's been at the McKinney Ruffs Nature Park for over 12 years now. So, Nicholas, last time we talked about birding is a sport where you could do it as simply as just going out and watching birds, or you could purchase technology and different items to assist you in the endeavor. Over the last year, what's maybe a new technology trend or something new that you've noticed in birding?
Well, you know, there's a lot of serious birders use what's called eBird to catalog their records, but a pretty user-friendly thing that I've seen used a lot more is called iNaturalist. iNaturalist is an app that you can get on your phone. It's also something you can view online that doesn't just, it's not limited to birds, but it shows you everything that's around. You can put a filter on it and say, I just want to see the birds within this specific area. Or you can even filter it out by species to see where the nearest bald eagle sightings have been. Imagine you're on a campout and you're near a lake and you wonder what kind of birds are around here. You just pull out your iNaturalist app and it's geo-referenced. So every picture, photograph that people have taken of wildlife is pinpointed to the actual location where that picture was taken. And that's pretty neat because that's a definite record of what's in your area. There's pictures of tracks, insects, mammals, birds, plants. And so that's a neat way to learn about what's around you is iNaturalist. And yeah. Best part is it's free.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And it's just a great way of an instance of using technology to make the whole process a little more fun and a little easier for people. I think that's only going to help birding apps like that. And what do you recommend maybe for a good set of binoculars? Maybe is that a frequent question you get, or is that are the birders really fanatics on that? What do you recommend when it comes to that?
Well, it depends on how thick your pocketbook is, but
we're not all like you. So,
well, without going straight to Swarovski, which is some pretty high grade optics, the number of the optics is probably more important than the brand. Arguably, there's a lot of difference in extremely low quality glass, but if you just get some standard Celestrons or Nikons or anything you'd find at a sporting goods store, you want to go for something like 8x42. 8x42 is the typical binocular that people like to use for birding. If you go much more, if you get really powerful binoculars, it's hard to hold it steady, and it's not really necessary to have that much zoom power. 8x42 is pretty standard in the birding world. Vortex Eagle optics are my choice. That's what I use.
A good set. Bushnell, another maker, Nikon. Okay. Those are all pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think those and they're pretty affordable, I think, too, those brands.
You bet. Under $200, $300 for most of them. You know, if you buy a set of binoculars for $30 to $50, you're probably not going to get the best optics for that. So it's good to spend $150 at least on a good set of binoculars. If you want a bird, and it's those low light conditions that get you.
And speaking of kind of birding and photography, did you happen to see this week the two guys that rescued the bald eagle and took a selfie with the bald eagle?
Oh no, I missed that. That sounds cool.
Yeah, I look up that on that was big on the internet a couple of days ago. So I recommend you and the listeners check that out. It's a pretty cool story and a pretty a once in a lifetime picture there, no doubt about it. So how can people, Nicholas, get involved? I know that you're kind of the ringleader there in the Austin area with Lost Pines. People around the country or North America, what can they do to get involved? How can they get more information?
Well, for people that are in our area of Texas, it's easy enough to just Google Lost Pines bird count, and then they can register there. If you're anywhere else and interested in what goes on at a Christmas bird count, you can just Google, type it in, CBC birds or Christmas bird count, and you should be able to have the Audubon website will come up there, and it'll say find a circle near you. It's about halfway down the page, and then you click on the Christmas bird count. It's pretty self-explanatory. It comes up with a map of the United States where you can see all the circles. And then when you move the mouse over one of those circles, it gives you the contact person of the lead compiler, their email and contact information. And then you can contact them directly about getting involved with the closest census in your area.
Great. And another way to get in touch with and see what you guys are doing, the Facebook page is really good. I checked it out for the Lost Pines Christmas Bird Count. I don't know who's updating that, but it's updated regularly. There's a lot of good information on that. I recommend everyone to go to the Lost Pines Christmas Bird Count on Facebook and like that page and kind of follow what's going on there. It's very educational. It's very informative. And it's a great follow. So I don't know if you have anything to do with that or not, Nicholas, but it's a great Facebook page.
I just submit some of the photos that are used.
Okay. Well, you're involved then. It's got your fingerprints on it a little bit.
I've got two more apps I want to give you an update on. The Merlin app is a really good app that's free from the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology. And what the Merlin app does is, instead of your standard bird ID guide, it allows you to, let's say all you saw was something about the size of a robin, and you saw two prominent colors on it. It has a color palette, and you choose which colors you saw, how big the bird was. It asks you if it was in a tree, on a fence, or flying, uses that habitat information. And then what it's thinking about when it gives you an answer is it's cross-referencing all of the most recent sightings through eBird's database to find out what's been seen in your area. So it uses the GPS coordinates of your phone. So instead of trying to tell you which one of the 60 species of sparrows it is, it narrows it down to the top 10 and gives you photographs with vocalizations and sounds of the bird so that you can see which one it might be. And that's a lot more helpful than trying to thumb through an intimidating field guide with pictures of birds that all look the same.
I agree. The app definitely is more user-friendly.
If you get a good picture of a bird, a lot of people are into bird photography, but they're not really sure what species it is. There is a new tool online. If you do a search for the Merlin app online, it's a feature that's not yet working on the mobile phones or pads, but it's on the desktop. You can upload a picture of a bird into this program, and it'll ask you to put the mouse on the beak and click the eye, the tail, and the feet. And after you click in the parameters that it asks for, it analyzes the patterns on your photograph and tells you what bird species you're looking at. They've been testing that out, and it's pretty accurate. It'll also, there's a new app that I told you about last year that should be coming out, been years in the making. It's called Bird Genie by Princeton. Bird Genie will use the microphone on your device to listen to the bird sound if it's close enough, analyze it, show you a graphed spectrogram of what the sound looks like, cross-reference that, and then identify the species. Based on the quality of your recording, it'll then also give you the percent accuracy that it believes that species is based on the sound you're hearing. That's incredible. Then there are going to be some 3D renditions of birds that are also available in that app. So instead of just looking at the bird as a profile shot, like you might see in most field guides, you can look at it from any angle, 360 degrees, and see what the coloration is.
I have to think that the enthusiasts and the novices could both appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. The name of that app is Bird Genie, and there's one for the Eastern U.S. and Western U.S. Like I said, it's not out yet. It's scheduled for sometime in the spring of 2016. That's something to look for.
Keep us informed on that, definitely. So let's just take a quick break here for our Amazon ad. If you're doing any shopping for bird watching equipment, binoculars, or anything here for the holidays, use the affiliate link here at the studio. And it's modernlifepodcastnetwork.com/Amazon for any and all of your shopping needs. No extra cost to you. You just go into modernlifepodcastnetwork.com/Amazon and then just do your shopping like you normally would on Amazon. And it helps support the studio here and all the shows and the variety of programming it brings the listeners. So great stuff from Amazon. It's always great to be a partner with them and take advantage of that affiliate link and help us out as well. So Nicholas, I know we'll get to what we're going to finish up with here in a second. We'd be remiss if we didn't get some bird calls or animal sounds from you and any other stories you want to tell. But tell the listeners first how if they have questions about anything you do or want to get in touch with you, how can they do that or anything else you want to promote?
Oh, I'll give you my email address. The best way to contact me if you have more questions or want to get involved with the bird count in our area, that's ncowie, ncowey, at lcra.org. ncowey, at lcra.org.
That's great. And you're very prompt on answering emails and questions. So any people that have a question, they should go to that. And I think last year, Nicholas, it's going to be, I know, a busy month here coming up for you and into the new year. But what really stood out last year when you came on was your animal sounds, your bird calls. I don't know what you exactly call them. But they, it has to be, we had to have been the first podcast ever that we were unleashing that on there. And we'd be remiss if we didn't get any new tricks that you have up your sleeve and any other good stories you want to tell us.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, I've had an interest lately in tracking and scat identification, which is also an interesting way to bird. You can identify birds' tracks to species pretty well and look along shoreline habitats. So, but, you know, one of the interesting birds that I've been looking at lately, and some of the listeners that aren't from the South, their only experience with the roadrunner might be a bird that's running full speed away from a coyote.
Yeah, well, we've all experienced that during our lifetime.
And
he was trying to get blown up by Acme product.
Yeah, you know, and so the vocalization of that species sounds kind of like this. Meep, meep. But a true story about roadrunners, which you won't see in the Looney Tunes version, is the unbelievable swiftness with which they dispatch a rattlesnake. One of the prey items of the roadrunner is the rattlesnake. Now, it takes about a tenth of a second for a rattlesnake to strike and recoil. In that tenth of a second, not only does the roadrunner dodge the strike of the venomous rattlesnake, but dives back in as the rattlesnake's recoiling and retracting its head and nail it right on the back of the neck on the first vertebrae and grab it by the neck and then bash its head on a rock. The other interesting series of photographs I've seen of rattlesnakes in action are that they sometimes grab the snake in mid-body or near the tail and whip the snake around their head like Indiana Jones cracking a whip. But first, they've got to position themselves close enough to a large rock to use that rock as an anvil to smash the head of the snake on as they strike it down to the ground. That takes a lot of talent.
Yeah, and do the roadrunners, do they actually make that beep beep noise, or is that just in the cartoon?
No, that's just in the cartoons. They don't make much sound at all. They do make a kind of a cooing sound. And in fact, they are in the cuckoo family. So they're relatives of the European bird that you hear in the clocks that say, cuckoo, cuckoo. They don't sound like the clock bird, but they do have a small kind of cooing sound that they make just in the springtime.
Now, most people would think the roadrunner is pretty indigenous to maybe the Southwest, but where else here in our country or in North America would you find roadrunners?
Well, I guess they're moving a little more into the Southeast, but you're right. It's more of a Southwestern bird. People that come here from the North, that's one of the species they like to look for. You won't be seeing them in Maine, Colorado, or Washington or Oregon. That's strictly a Southwest species.
So that's something to look forward and research. So Wile E. Coyote has something in common with the rattlesnake. The roadrunner can take them both, huh?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Any new sounds that you have for birds, or maybe a a sound that people should be on the lookout for when they're out this fall or this winter, maybe taking a hike if they hear it? Maybe you could help them identify a particular bird.
Two birds that people often confuse are the, first of all, the movies have helped us out. Every time you hear a bald eagle shrieking on TV, it is more than likely a red-tailed hawk. Mm-hmm. So the red-tailed hawks have that kind of high-pitched jeering sound. The bald eagle, it doesn't work well for the movies. It sounds more like something squeaking. But I'll tell you what, the whippoorwill is one that a lot of people hear, and that one sounds like this. The chuckwill's widow is actually something that we have more in Texas here and in the South. The chuckwill's widow, a lot of people call it the whippoorwill, but it sounds like it's saying its name, chuckwill's widow. And you'll hear them going on and on incessantly all night long. I tell you, one of the most interesting sounds I heard was at a naturalist meeting the other week. Somebody said they heard something that sounded like the Predator. In the movie, The Predator, the alien makes this weird clicking sound, and I had to Google it to figure out what on earth they were talking about. It's actually javelina grinding their teeth together. Javelinas, wild hogs in the South, actually grind their teeth together rapidly. It sounds like two bones being hit together at a machine gun speed. And it's kind of unnerving if you're camping and you hear a crowd of little javelinas coming towards you, grinding their teeth together.
Why are they doing that, Nicholas? Is it to keep predators away from them?
Yeah, it could be a territorial thing. I don't know that we've decoded all the exact reasons for different vocalizations. Those wild hogs make about six different types of sounds, and it may be one way that they communicate to each other in close range, so they know where they are while they're feeding at night, or it may be a territorial display thing between females of a similar group that are trying to impress one another with their their vocalization abilities. I'm not sure.
Actually, there's some tech products out now, or some gadgets that play white noise when you're trying to get to sleep. And I reviewed a few of these products, and a few of them have an option for, it makes, it's called Birds in the Wild or something. So you can fall asleep and sleep all night to the bird sounds. And I think that's kind of a nice idea for people, as they're, trying to get to sleep maybe this fall or this winter. It's better than just hearing the blaring noise of a white noise fan or something. So have you ever researched those at all, Nicholas, or investigated those at all?
I use them with my kids every day. You kidding? Yeah, that's what puts them to sleep.
Oh yeah, you're playing those about 6 o'clock at night, trying to get them to sleep. Probably.
That's right. Hey, I was going to do a couple more sounds for you. The gray tree frog is really common. The gray tree frog has a kind of a short trill. And the higher the pitch you hear, it's a younger frog. So everybody knows a bullfrog, you got. Now you hear a high pitched bullfrog, that's a young one. That's an adolescent trying to mark his territory verbally in the pond. And then you hear Big Granddaddy going, arm, arm, the big jug of rum. You may hear a difference in pitch. Now, a difference in speed will tell you temperature. So let's go with a leopard frog. Leopard frog kind of grunts like. Now, a leopard frog in cold weather, about 60 degrees, is going to sound slower, more like this. And then when the temperature increases to the 80s and 90s, it'll be really fast. So you use, of course, the speed of the call and the pitch to to give you a little more information about what you're hearing.
Amazing animal sounds and always a treat. And we're looking forward to the results, Nicholas, for the upcoming bird count, and appreciate all you do with promoting that and promoting your passion. And great to have you on and talk to you every year.
One last tidbit that I was going to share with you was how the American kestrel is what a lot of people call the sparrowhawk. It's the smallest bird of prey. We're seeing those move down south in the wintertime. You'll see them usually over farm land and agricultural land. If you're driving and you see a small little hawk that's sitting on the power line, it's likely a kestrel. Well, the interesting thing about kestrels is that they actually see in the ultraviolet field. So they're looking in the UV, and you think birds of prey are up there just looking for something furry. What I need you to imagine is that the American kestrel is actually looking for rodent pee. So urine reflects ultraviolet radiation like a fluorescent light. So it's looking for these kind of like fluorescent yellowish green spots glowing out in the field. And those series of dots are none other than a rodent trail, right? Because it's where they stop and urinate. Well, if you're seeing a series of dots in the field and suddenly one of those dots disappears, what's that mean? It means a rodent's on top of that area peeing on some other rodent spot, right? So by looking for disappearing dots that are these fluorescent glowing dots out in the field, they're able to hone in and focus their attention to that area, and they take off their perch and head over there to get a mouse.
That is one smart bird.
Well, if you had UV vision like the kestrel and birds of prey, then instead of trying to fumble around for your sunglasses while you're driving down the road, all you'd have to do is a switch on your brain would turn a polarizing liquid that would flush to the front of your eyes at whatever level of polarization and darkness you wanted. And that's pretty much the way birds do it.
That's fantastic. And great to know that those birds are, that's really what nature's all about. It's how these animals survive and have survived for years, and the little tricks they have. We have our tricks as humans, kind of, you know, how we get by, and animals and birds have that as well. So Nicholas, thanks for coming on again this year, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you bet. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicholas. And just hold on for a second, as we want to let you know that Modern Life Podcast Network has many other shows which may be of interest to you. You can go to modernlifepodcastnetwork.com, check out all the shows that are available. And also the podcast and internet broadcast directory, Two Thumbs Up Media, twothumbsupmedia.com, where you can discover new shows and new programs to listen to. So a great website there. Make sure you have that bookmark. So thanks to Nicholas Cowie for coming on this week. You've been listening to The Tech of Sports, a Modern Life Podcast Network production.
The Modern Life Podcast Network focuses on technology, lifestyle, business, sports, and culture. Our modern lives can be hectic, demanding one day and relaxing the next. Our hosts discuss the issues facing our modern lives and provide the answers and ideas to make the journey through life and business a bit easier. Find your new favorite podcast at modernlifepodcastnetwork.com. Modern issues, modern discussions.